The Veteran Next Door. Here's your host, Randall Baxter.
Historic communique number one said simply this. Under the command of General Eisenhower, Allied naval forces, supported by strong air forces, began landing Allied armies this morning on the northern coast of France. The Germans say, for whatever it's worth, and it may be sheer propaganda intended to spread confusion, that we have effected those landings on the 75-mile section of the Normandy coast, between the mouth of the Seine River, westward to the port of Cherbourg. The Germans tell of a sea battle raging off Le Havre, there at the Seine's mouth. And later, German bulletins add that we had already landed reinforcements near Le Havre and were pushing inland. The Germans, again, also say that much of our strength is concentrated at the city of Caen, which lies 8.5 miles inland from the Normandy shores. Whether that action is by our parachutists who've been landing in swarms behind German defenses all morning, or whether it's actually a penetration from the sea itself, is not clear at this moment. But this is the first action, and others will follow wave on wave. The people of Holland and all along the French coast were warned to evacuate a strip of coastline 22 miles wide to make way for this invasion. That was early this morning. That warning went out with the official invasion announcement and the publication of General Eisenhower's order of the day. This first strip of French soil chosen for our assault lies exactly across the channel from the historic English soil, across from the great naval base at Portsmouth, the great port of Southampton, the ports of Dover, Brighton, Hastings. Yes, Hastings, where William the Conqueror landed in 1066 in that other invasion, the invasion of England. The port of Le Havre, a great base in the
you
land
know,
of war and one of France.
That story, that news broadcast was not entirely correct. That was the German version of what was going on. But the reality was, in between Caen and Cherbourg were two beaches that involved the Americans, Utah and Omaha Beach. And everybody knows the story, the problems, the accidents of fate, where someone would drop a door and lose his life, and others would survive miraculous experiences on the beaches of Utah and Omaha. And that's not quite our story today. We know the story of the thousands of men who died on that beach and were wounded and crashed through the German lines. But our story today is about a group of American soldiers in the Army who were called longshore soldiers. And these are the men who came onto the beaches on barges and tugboats. And what you're going to learn today is how those soldiers helped us win on D-Day. You're listening to The Veteran Next Door. I'm your host, Randy Baxter, and we'll be right back.
So will you please say hello to the folks that I know? Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song.
The Veteran Next Door will return in a moment.
Stories told and retold from the battlefronts of America's wars by the veterans themselves. The Veteran Next Door. You love the show. Now, get the book. World War II, Volume 1, 1939 to 1946. Read about how our veterans attempted to free children trapped by fascist countries. Learn about the supermen we sent to liberate the world from the crimes of World War II. Stories of Pacific land battles on the land and the sea, battles in Europe, land in the air, survival in the ocean, when a ship sinks and one breaks in half. Soldiers who deserve the Medal of Honor. And read the story of the Battle of Athens, Tennessee, when many soldiers came home and had to deal with a corrupt county government and prove the need for our Second Amendment. Stories told and retold from from the battlefronts of America's wars. Be sure to get your copy at Amazon.com. The Veteran Next Door, Stories from World War II, Volume 1, 1939 through 1946. Don't miss one word of The Veteran Next Door.
You know, if you already have the book, I hope you're enjoying it. But a lot of people ask me, do they have to order through Amazon.com? Answer is no. You can get it direct from me and have it autographed. All you have to do is call 865-525-2323. Or you can go to my website at www.theveterannextdoor.com. And those are all little letters, no spaces, theveterannextdoor.com. Makes a great gift for birthdays, anniversaries. You know, I get emails from people that said they've bought and read the book and they've learned more about their parents by reading the experience of other people during World War II. I think you would enjoy it too. So give us a call, 865-525-2323, or order the book online at theveterannextdoor.com.
If you'd like a copy of today's show, contact Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com or call 865-525-2323. Or you can pick them up at the Veteran Next Door store at 4812 Asheville Highway. Copies can be purchased as individual shows, multiple copies of the same show, or as a series. What better way to share time with the kids than by listening to the experiences of people who actually lived through historic events, like the Battle of the Bulge, World War I, Knoxville during the Civil War, Vietnam as told by soldiers who were there, the Cuban Missile Crisis, Afghanistan, and Islam in the 20th century. Each show is hosted by the Veteran Next Door host, Randy Baxter, describing the history-making events and introducing you to people who experienced the event firsthand. Purchase the shows one at a time or in sets by topic or mix and match to suit your learning needs. For a list of available shows, call 865-525-2323 or contact Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com.
Are you a licensed life insurance agent anywhere in the United States? Are you a Medicare specialist, final expense agent, captive agent, or independent broker? I have a software package that you're going to want. It's by Estate Docs Pro, and it allows you to establish a revocable living trust for your clients, and you become their go-to person for estate planning and financial planning. You can get a free 30-day trial of this software with training, and all you have to do is ask. You can call me at 865-525-2323, or you can email me at randallbaxter@randallbaxter.com or www.estatepositioningservices.com. Get your 30-day trial. Get your training on how to set this up and watch your income go up. Remember, there's absolutely no cost to you as the agent to learn this software program. No commitment, no obligation. But once you see how it works, you're going to be glad you made the call. Call 865-525-2323 or get in touch with Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com.
Now back to the Veteran Next Door.
This is the Veteran Next Door. I'm your host, Randy Baxter. And today we're talking about the World War II U.S. Army Harbor Craft Companies that landed in Europe on D-Day and the day after. You know, in researching the World War II story, the U.S. Army port battalions I became familiar with were just transportation corps units that served in port supply operations. But the Army was never very comfortable coordinating with the Navy, and it didn't want to rely completely on civilian boat workers. For the Normandy invasion, the U.S. Army created the Harbor Craft Companies to man its small supply craft, mostly barges, cranes, and tugboats. The War Department field manual called it the Transportation Corps Small Boats and Harbor Craft. It was published in 1944. It gives a short description of the Army Harbor Craft Company. The Harbor Craft Company is a military unit organized for the purpose of ferrying cargo from freighters and transports arriving in theaters of operation. The vessels may either be riding at anchor offshore in the open sea or, which is more likely, anchored in a harbor. Cargo from ships is loaded by Transportation Corps port company personnel onto the barges. Tugs, towboats, then propel these barges to the shore for unloading cargo too heavy for the vessel's gear lift. And that might even be handled by a floating crane. So, you know, when we talk about D-Day and all the soldiers pouring into the beaches, somebody had to bring their supplies in. I had read somewhere where to outfit one soldier in World War II for 1 year, it took 12,000 pounds of supplies. Somebody had to get it. Somebody had to turn the ships around. The big ships would come in and they were too, you know, the harbors weren't big enough to whip a big ship around, so the tugboats had to turn them around. And remember, the Army didn't want to work with the Navy or didn't trust the Navy or felt uncomfortable working with the Navy, not wanting to give up command. So the end result was they created their own unit, and this began the birth of the dog-faced sailors. And our guest today is Mr. James Lusby, who was one of those sailors. And I read his description of his service record, and when I flipped over to it and read what went on, it said he was a seaman. When I first saw that, I thought, well, he's in the Navy. No, this is the Army. He was a seaman. Served with the 334th Harbor Craft Company in England, France, Belgium, and Holland for 22 months. Acted as mate on 86-foot tugboat, towing barges with equipment and turning ships into position in the harbor. He assigned duties to other seamen, handling lines, ropes, hawsers. I don't even know what a hawser is. Filling fuel and water tanks, and maintaining ship in good condition. He steered the ship according to compass bearings and rules of navigation. He supervised the cleaning of decks and quarters and the repairing of tugboats when necessary. He stood watch, reporting hazards to navigation, and performed duties occasionally under enemy fire. Earlier, I had a chance to speak with Mr. Lusby, and he and I and his family, we discussed his experiences during World War II as a dog-faced seaman.
So I don't know where to start, except maybe just to ask you what you were doing before World War II.
Before World War II, I was going to school, Central High School.
Central High School.
Central High School. And I joined the service in April. And left for Fort Bragg, my mind's kind of
off. That's okay.
I left. So I was going to graduate in May, but I thought if I joined, I'd get my diploma.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to town a couple of days. A week I was going to school, and my mother wouldn't know where I was at, and I told her I went down to enlistment services, and she said she didn't want me to go, but I told her I would join the Marines, but seemed to take it all right, and so the next day I went down and joined the Army.
The Army.
And so I left for Fort Bragg and went with a bunch of enlistees and drafted. And I was the only one there that joined, so when I got down there, my papers didn't come down. I spent a week at Fort Bragg. Well, I wasn't even in the service, but they had me doing everything. So finally, when I got back, I went down to Fort Bragg the next time on Friday, before Easter in April, 43. And I left there and went to Fayetteville, North Carolina, Fort Bragg, and I spent 13 weeks there at and field artillery. I took training on a 155 howitzer.
Oh, big gun.
Big gun. So, and I left there and went to a replacement center in Chenango, Pennsylvania. And so they're taking replacements out. While I was there, they formed a landing craft. We were paratrooper boots. What we was doing was going on the beach and pulling these heavy cables on the beach where these tanks can get off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of guys in that unit for us went to Italy, I believe it was Italy, no, it was Sicily, mm-hmm. and most of them got killed, so they abolished that outfit. So we went from there to Massachusetts, Camp Edwards, Massachusetts. And we didn't stay there very long, but they sent us down to Camp Gordon, Florida. And we took training there as a harbor craft company. It was CMU's light craft, cranes, tugboats, and I wound up on a CMU. It's about a 35 or 40 foot barge, about 15 foot wide, with two Chrysler Marine engines, 750 Chrysler Marine engines. And so we took our training and we'd come back to New York and caught a ship over to Scotland. There's a New Amsterdam. And so it was 8,000 of us on that boat. And so we took a train from there and went to Liverpool, England. And we started training there for the invasion. And so May the 6th, when the invasion was, I believe.
June 6th.
I wasn't in the first wave of the invasion.
Uh-huh.
They needed my outfit. They was about eight of us went across the time I did. And I had a guy going with me. His name was Glenn Miller, and he was up here from Johnson City. He got sick and they took him off, and I crossed the English Channel by myself on that sea mule. And what we did.
A sea mule?
A sea mule.
Was that a tugboat or was that?
No, it was just a big barge with two Chrysler Marine, 750 Chrysler Marine motors on it.
So you drove it by yourself?
Yeah, I rode it by myself.
Across the English Channel?
Across the English Channel. Yeah, well, he started out, but he got sick and I had to take him off. So I rode it by myself. But when we got there, we had one lieutenant about my age, I guess, and he was in charge of us. There's about eight of us. And the reason they did that, these ships bringing supplies in couldn't get into the beach. And so what they did, they had us to take those sea mules and take these barges and go out and tie up alongside, and they'd load them. And we'd bring them back into the beach and shove up as far as we could, and these cranes would take supplies off. Mostly food, I think. But anyway, I didn't have no place to sleep or no place to eat. I was signed any place. So I had it pretty good because I'd go aboard when they was loading, I'd go aboard the ships, and they fed me, and so I took a shower. But I slept in the hub of that single on a coiled rope for about 3 weeks.
Well, were you the only person on the barge?
I was the only person who rode the sea mule out on the barge, take the sea mule out to the ship. And I guess it was, I don't know, forced from here to the out to the highway, probably a little further than that.
Mm-hmm.
And they throw that stuff on. They tried doing it with ducks, you know, these ducks.
Yeah, the ducks, yeah.
They tried to do it with ducks, but they sank and they couldn't do it with them. We stayed there for, I don't know. But while I was there on the beach, they needed another hand on the tugboat, so that was a good deal. So I left the sea mule and got on the tugboat. It was a 86-foot tug, and it had, I believe, 9 guys on it. And so when I got on it, the thing broke down, and we had to go back to Southampton. Went back to Southampton to stay two or three weeks, I guess. I always wait for a park to come from the United States. Mm-hmm. But while I was there, we didn't dress like most people. While I was there, I wore a navy jacket, you know, with a collar on it. And my mother sent me some loafers. I had them on. And when I made my mistake, there was a colonel come down the street, and I saluted him. And he turned around right quick and went, "What in the world? Boy, what kind of outfit are you in?" And I told him, and he said, "You better get you some uniform on." I said, he ate me out pretty good. So he said, "Well, what have you been doing?" I said, "I just come back from over on Normandy." I said, "We've been over about 3 weeks." And then that cooled him down. He got talking, he asked me about it. He let me go, but he leaned me out real good. Mm-hmm. But we went back. We left there and went to when we left the beach, we went to the Sand River, I believe, a place in Rouen, France. Mm-hmm. And we worked there for a while. And while we was there, there's a big water, a pillar of water come through and tore up most of our stuff loose. We had to run down. We didn't stay there too awful long. And I believe we left there and went to. Oh.
Did you have anything to do with building those piers?
No.
The Mulberry Piers?
No. While we was in Rouen, France, the guys got to shoot. They had these barrage balloons on these ships, you know. Mm-hmm. Some of these nuts got to shooting them things down. They took all of our guns away from us. And so so we stayed there. We stayed there for a while and worked there. And so I believe when we left there, we went back to Le Havre. But while I was in Rouen, France, one morning I woke up and I heard such a racket in my life. It was pretty close to the end of the war. And I looked out and planes as far as you could see that way and that way. They went over from about 6 o'clock to about 12. I thought them boys not gonna get on, this war's gonna be over. But we went to Le Havre and worked out there for a while. And while we was there, I think the war ended.
In Le Havre?
Yeah, I believe that's where I was at, Le Havre, when the war ended. I'd have spent 60-something years, But anyway, after that one long, they took us and we was done training us to go to Japan, because the war still going on in Japan. And so, before too awful long, before they got us trained, the war ended. And then they sent us to Belgium. And the reason they sent us to Belgium, they sent a lot of them home, because a lot of them had enough points, and when the war was over, I didn't have no children, I wasn't married or nothing, I didn't have many points, so they sent me to Belgium. And what we did is we took a tugboat and went down through the locks to Holland, and the reason we went down there, took a barge down there and got a lump of sand every day. What we was doing is bringing it back to balance those ships so they come back overseas, come back home.
Yeah.
So that's about that. Then I came home while I went to Camp Atterbury, Indiana, and I got my discharge there and I came back home. Mm-hmm. And I was going to go back. I was going to get a junior warrant officer commission if I went back, but I. That was my plan. I met Doris and I was in the Army service.
Tell me about crossing the English Channel by yourself in a barge. Yeah. Tell me about the weather.
The weather wasn't too bad. The weather wasn't too pretty calm. But see, I was in a convoy.
Uh-huh.
So all I had to do was just stay with them.
What was it, daytime or nighttime?
Yeah, it was daytime. Early in the morning we took off. Didn't meet no resistance at all.
And you could, how long did it take?
I don't know, probably. It didn't take too awful long, maybe 6 or 8 hours. Didn't take a day or nothing. English Channel's not too far.
How old were you then?
19, I believe.
Driving a barge across the English Channel.
I didn't know better.
What?
But you know, another experience I had, they liked to blow us off the, let's see, where was I? In Southampton.
Uh-huh.
You know those V-bombs and mm-hmm. stuff like
yeah.
that? That's when I was in what they call Colorstone. We was the Colorstone Mansion in Liverpool.
Uh-huh.
And while we was there, those bombs come across, you hear them coming. And they had these dugouts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we got so used to it, they'd come in and run us out. Soon they, a lot of us get under the bed and just wait till the things went over. But you could hear them blasting. I was down on this barge one time, the one come across and hit in the water and knocked me halfway across the barge.
Really? So you could see them coming?
Oh, yeah, you could see them, especially at night.
And you could hear them?
You could hear them coming. They had them. And I was in Plymouth. I was in Plymouth, England, too. And they tore that place all to pieces. I've never seen such a mess in my life. But it was an experience.
Were you two married then? Or did y'all get married after the war?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know her before the war.
He was going to go back.
I didn't have no girlfriend enough when I went over, so I just... I said, well, I'll stay over here. But the thing about it, all your friends, a lot of your friends leave and you don't have nobody.
Yeah.
The guy I was very close to, Charlie McCormick, and he lived in Plattsburgh, New York. And he was married and he had a kid and he was real anxious to get home. But I didn't. I said, well.
Did you ever talk to him again?
Oh, he comes to see me two or three times.
Really?
Yeah, he did. He's a good guy. But he wound up with about 12 kids. Of course, I got six.
You got six? Well, my mom had six. What number are you?
Number three.
Three. I'm number three. And you're
four.
What?
Four. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been a good life.
Was this a picture of those tugboats? Does that look like them? Or?
I got the picture right here.
I'd like to see one.
I don't have a picture to see you, but I got a picture of the tugboat.
Yeah.
No. That's Charlie McCormick there.
Okay.
That's
he looks, he's ready for that movie, Grease. He's got his hair.
Yeah.
And what is this?
Let me see.
It's him and his family.
Yeah, that's his family.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Is he still alive, or do you know?
No, he's been dead several years.
Yeah. Wonder where he got that leather coat.
I don't know.
You say he was from New York?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He looks like he's from New York, doesn't he?
Plattsburgh, New York. There is some. That's just some of the guys.
Do you still remember their names?
No. I wish I did.
You know, when you think about D-Day and all the soldiers coming on the beaches, we don't think about the fact that there were men who got them there and men who took them there and men who supplied them. We don't think about those men stationed over there seeing the rockets come across and hearing the rockets come and landing nearby. And we don't think about being on a tugboat and looking up in the sky and seeing a dogfight. And, you know, when we're looking through a scrapbook and we're looking at pictures, friends that some of you remember the name, some of you didn't. Seemed like some had particular importance or in his memory and that he knew them, but some had just come and gone and he just couldn't remember their names. So stay tuned when we come back from break. You're going to find out a lot more about the dog-faced seaman. You're listening to The Veteran Next Door. I'm your host, Randy Baxter, and we'll be right back.
I was singing this song. We meet again. Don't know where. Don't know where.
The Veteran Next Door will return in a moment.
Stories told and retold from the battlefronts of America's wars by the veterans themselves. The Veteran Next Door. You love the show. Now get the book. World War II, Volume 1, 1939 to 1946. Read about how our veterans attempted to free children trapped by fascist countries. Learn about the supermen we sent to liberate the world from the crimes of World War II. Stories of Pacific land battles on the land and the sea, battles in Europe, land in the air, survival in the ocean, when a ship sinks and one breaks in half, soldiers who deserve the Medal of Honor. And read the story of the Battle of Athens, Tennessee, when many soldiers came home and had to deal with a corrupt county government and prove the need for our Second Amendment. Stories told and retold from the battlefronts of America's wars. Be sure to get your copy at Amazon.com. The Veteran Next Door, Stories from World War II, Volume 1, 1939 through 1946. Don't miss one word of The Veteran Next Door.
You know, if you already have the book, I hope you're enjoying it. But a lot of people ask me, do they have to order through Amazon.com? Answer is no. You can get it direct from me and have it autographed. All you have to do is call 865-525-2323. Or you can go to my website at www.theveterannextdoor.com. And those are all little letters, no spaces, theveterannextdoor.com. Makes a great gift for birthdays, anniversaries. I get emails from people that said they've bought and read the book and they've learned more about their parents by reading the experience of other people during World War II. I think you'd enjoy it too. So give us a call, 865-525-2323, or order the book online at theveterannextdoor.com.
If you'd like a copy of today's show, contact Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com or call 865-525-2323. Or you can pick them up at the Veteran Next Door store at 4812 Asheville Highway. Copies can be purchased as individual shows, multiple copies of the same show, or as a series. What better way to share time with the kids than by listening to the experiences of people who actually lived through historic events, like the Battle of the Bulge, World War I, Knoxville during the Civil War, Vietnam as told by soldiers who were there, the Cuban Missile Crisis, Afghanistan, and Islam in the 20th century. Each show is hosted by the Veteran Next Door host, Randy Baxter, describing the history-making events and introducing you to people who experienced the event firsthand. Purchase the shows one at a time or in sets by topic or mix and match to suit your learning needs. For a list of available shows, call 865-525-2323 or contact Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com.
Are you a licensed life insurance agent anywhere in the United States? Are you a Medicare specialist, final expense agent, captive agent, or independent broker? I have a software package that you're going to want. It's by Estate Docs Pro, and it allows you to establish a revocable living trust for your clients, and you become their go-to person for estate planning and financial planning. You can get a free 30-day trial of this software with training, and all you have to do is ask. You can call me at 865-525-2323, or you can email me at randallbaxter@randallbaxter.com or www.estatepositioningservices.com. Get your 30-day trial. Get your training on how to set this up and watch your income go up. Remember, there's absolutely no cost to you as the agent to learn this software program. No commitment, no obligation. But once you see how it works, you're going to be glad you made the call. Call 865-525-2323 or get in touch with Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com.
Now back to The Veteran Next Door.
Welcome back to The Veteran Next Door. You know, the story Mr. Lesby has told us, he didn't tell us all of it. It wasn't all peaches and cream and wasn't all easy. You know, he talks about the barges crossing the English Channel and the tugboats. But, you know, the Harbor Craft companies were under fire. And Mr. Lesby was a seaman. The Army called him on his discharge papers a seaman 065, but they also said he was a rifle marksman, and there was a reason for that, that they had to have the marksman on the ships. And I know they said they took their guns away from him because some of the men were misusing them, but but one of his qualifications was as a marksman. But the men of the Harbor Craft Companies had a big hand in making the landings a success and the shipping of supplies. The Harbor Craft Companies were an invention of World War II, because in World War I, we had the advantage of being able to use the French tugboats, English tugboats and things like that, but that just wasn't our option during World War II. But there were several Harbor Craft Companies activated in Charleston, South Carolina, and sent to Europe. And what was typical was the crews could be under attack at any time. The crew of one convoy from Southampton to Cherbourg was made up of men from the Harbor Craft Company, and in a dense fog one night, five of the boats became separated from the convoy, and they were fired on when they approached the shore on the following morning. The ship's master set course to the north, and before he could clear the channel isles, the enemy attacked. Dive bombers and cannon fire from the shores. The first round took off the foremast, and seven of the crew went overboard. One sailor refused to abandon ship and went down. A sergeant was so badly injured that he later died. An officer was severely wounded in the leg. The survivors clung to the rubber raft until nearly dark the next day, and when they were picked up by the British destroyers and returned to England. So, you know, it wasn't, that didn't happen to Mr. Lusby, but it happened to the men like him that were serving our country on those tugboats. So those tugboats weren't as safe as maybe Mr. Lusby had you believe. You know, you guys don't know Mr. Lusby, but I've known him and his family most of my life, and he is a sweet, honorable, honest, religious man. And during World War II, he was a sweet, honorable, probably religious, young 19-year-old boy with not a lot of experience, not a lot of experience in business. And he was running into people at the end of the war who were European, French, English, Belgium, people that had learned to manipulate the system. At least that's what they would have called it, but we called it the black market.
Did they tell you to look out for black market?
Yeah. But our company, that's what I was going to say, our company was in the black market. Our captain on the boat sold a tug. Oh, we rented some English tugboats. Uh-huh. And that's what he let go. He had two guys that he had to get the boat, take the boat and sell it. And when he got back, he put them, that's when the Battle of the Bulge was going on. Mm-hmm. He shot them right into the Battle of the Bulge.
They put him into the battle boats?
No, not the officer. No.
Yeah.
Them two guys that took that boat. It was hooked on behind the LST,
mm-hmm.
and they claimed it was blown up, but it was sold. And so they got told on him. So when the Battle of the Bulge, that was a way for him to get out. They got killed, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And the ice awful, but that's the truth.
Yeah, that was their punishment?
Yeah. And there's a guy living in North Carolina that when they draw rations, he'd steal one of them big trucks, go get his rations and take them to sell them to Frenchmen.
Well, there was big money to be made.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He told me, he said, I've just about bought a farm up there in North Carolina since I've been
Well, toward the end, they were buying Mercedes with boxes of cartons of cigarettes.
Yeah, so, yeah.
And it was the guys who were handling all the supplies and everything.
You could sell a carton of cigarettes anywhere from $50 to $100 a carton.
Yeah.
Maybe a pack. I quit smoking, and so I let the guys have my cigarettes because they give me money for it. Mm-hmm. They sold them. So I smoked to have something to do because I didn't crave cigarettes or nothing. Never mm-hmm. had smoked any. I smoked them because they was cheap, 50 cents a carton, all it made.
50 cents a carton.
So let's expand a little bit on the black market. And at the end of World War II, it didn't matter how young you were. You had to survive in the world that you were placed in. And people like Mr. Lesby were given a rifle and told to guard warehouses and to keep an eye out for people, that for anything suspicious. You know, and he even mentioned that he had seen maybe trucks get stolen and tugboats get stolen and sold and men get caught and get punished. But, you know, and he said we were the black market. And in a way, innocently, these young men, sometimes they had to turn their eye when they saw something, because their bunkmate, they might know that their bunkmate was heavily involved in the black market. And maybe it was better for a stranger to get caught than it was for somebody they knew. But let's look at the math a little bit. Now, first we're going to talk about cigarettes. And you could buy a carton of cigarettes for 50 cents. But there are people that once you got those cigarettes, and as soon as you walked out of the PX, they would start following you to see if maybe you might be in the market to sell those cigarettes. And they might offer you $20 or $25 for something that you just spent 50 cents on. And then you got to think about, you know, $20. A lot of those soldiers were only making $35 or $40 a month. And here they've got a carton of cigarettes they just spent 50 cents on, and they're getting ready to make $20. And then it might be a Belgian civilian. It might be a French civilian. It might be another American soldier who might know somebody who wants 100 cartons. So, but he's got to go get them up because his ration ticket only allowed him to have one carton, and he's got to come up with all of his buddies and everything, and maybe they form a little black market conglomerative of 19, 20, 21, 22-year-old men, and all of a sudden 100 of them have 100 cartons of cigarettes that they'd paid 50 cents a piece for, and they're getting ready to get $20 each. Now that's step one. So now you take your $20, put 10 in your pocket because you want to have a good time tonight. You take that other 10 and you go out into Belgium or France and you buy you some French francs, maybe 8 of them for a dollar. And then you take those French francs back into the base and get the going rate of exchange inside that base, where the Americans exchange the franc for what it's worth between France and American, which is 4 for a dollar. You just bought 8 for a dollar. So now you just took your $10 and doubled it. So now you got $20. The next day, you get off of your 12-hour shift, and you go back into town, and you buy 8 more francs, and you take it back into the PX and exchange it. You remember now, you bought 8 francs for a dollar, and you're going to go back in, and on the base, you're going to exchange it 4 francs for a dollar. So your dollar now is $2. So day one, you've got $10. Day two, you've got $20. Day three, $40. Then $80. Then by Friday, you've got $160. By Sunday, you've got $640. And 1 week later, you have $40,960. And it only took $5,000 or $6,000 or $7,000 to build a house when you got home. So the math, and again, it's these 19-year-old boys weren't doing that, but they were learning and seeing what the soldiers that had been there for a while and what the officers were doing. And they, you know, that was the world that they were in. And they were naive, that, you know, they had to learn it. But then when they came in, they had to keep their mouths shut because the money was so big. Think how much $40,000 then would be worth today if you could buy 6 houses off of 2 weeks' work of working the black market in Belgium and France toward the end of World War II. Some people got caught. the black market was real big in gasoline, and that was a you could be shot if you were selling gasoline to on the black market during the war. But as the war winded down, they didn't punish you that bad for selling gasoline. But even Mr. Lesby said that he saw an officer report a tugboat as stolen or sunk, and the two guys that did it sold that tugboat, and then all you had to do was get somebody to report it as stolen. Now, you didn't have to pay for it because it was sunk or stolen. And all of a sudden, you had all this money, which you could take back out on the black market. So a lot of people don't understand what the black market was. Like in the movies, you see somebody trading whiskey or trading cigarettes. But if you look at the exponential advantage of black market trade in cash and foreign trade in cash, you could become a very wealthy person in just a very short period of time during World War II. And that, my friends, was the black market. You're listening to Veteran Next Door, and we'll be right back.
The Veteran Next Door will return in a moment.
Stories told and retold from the battlefronts of America's wars by the veterans themselves. The Veteran Next Door. You love the show. Now, get the book. World War II, Volume 1, 1939 to 1946. Read about how our veterans attempted to free children trapped by fascist countries. Learn about the supermen we sent to liberate the world from the crimes of World War II. Stories of Pacific land battles on the land and the sea, battles in Europe, land in the air, survival in the ocean, when a ship sinks and one breaks in half, soldiers who deserve the Medal of Honor, and read the story of the Battle of Athens, Tennessee, when many soldiers came home and had to deal with a corrupt county government and prove the need for our Second Amendment. Stories told and retold from the battlefront of America's wars. Be sure to get your copy at Amazon.com. The Veteran Next Door, Stories from World War II, Volume 1, 1939 through 1946. Don't miss one word of The Veteran Next Door.
You know, if you already have the book, I hope you're enjoying it. But a lot of people ask me, do they have to order through Amazon.com? Answer is no. You can get it direct from me and have it autographed. All you have to do is call 865-525-2323. Or you can go to my website at www.theveterannextdoor.com. And those are all little letters, no spaces, theveterannextdoor.com. Makes a great gift for birthdays, anniversaries. You know, I get emails from people that said they've bought and read the book and they've learned more about their parents by reading the experience of other people during World War II. I think you'd enjoy it too. So give us a call, 865-525-2323, or order the book online at theveterannextdoor.com.
If you'd like a copy of today's show, contact Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com or call 865-525-2323. Or you can pick them up at the Veteran Next Door store at 4812 Asheville Highway. Copies can be purchased as individual shows, multiple copies of the same show, or as a series. What better way to share time with the kids than by listening to the experiences of people who actually lived through historic events, like the Battle of the Bulge, World War I, Knoxville during the Civil War, Vietnam as told by soldiers who were there, the Cuban Missile Crisis, Afghanistan, and Islam in the 20th century. Each show is hosted by the Veteran Next Door host, Randy Baxter, describing the history-making events and introducing you to people who experienced the event firsthand. Purchase the shows one at a time or in sets by topic or mix and match to suit your learning need. For a list of available shows, call 865-525-2323 or contact Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com.
Are you a licensed life insurance agent anywhere in the United States? Are you a Medicare specialist, final expense agent, captive agent, or independent broker? I have a software package that you're going to want. It's by Estate Docs Pro, and it allows you to establish a revocable living trust for your clients, and you become their go-to person for estate planning and financial planning. You can get a free 30-day trial of this software with training, and all you have to do is ask. You can call me at 865-525-2323, or you can email me at randallbaxter@randallbaxter.com or www.estatepositioningservices.com. Get your 30-day trial. Get your training on how to set this up and watch your income go up. Remember, there's absolutely no cost to you as the agent to learn this software program. No commitment, no obligation. But once you see how it works, you're going to be glad you made the call. Call 865-525-2323 or get in touch with Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com.
Now back to the veteran next door.
We'll meet again.
These first-hand accounts, historical photographs, and original maps. His experience as a longshore soldier recounts the wartime experience that these soldiers had. As part of the U.S. Army's Transportation Corps, he was responsible for ensuring that thousands of tons of military supplies were packed, unloaded, and delivered to the front lines. Moving from training stateside to supply operations on the beaches of Normandy to dock work in the massive high-risk seaport of Antwerp, Belgium, and finally to deactivation. In the book, Longshore Soldiers, by Andrew Brosnia, you can get it on Amazon.com. That's Longshore Soldiers. Offers a compelling narrative of what daily life was like in this remarkable yet often overlooked service. Perhaps most importantly, Brosnia's use of personal histories as the basis for examining the logistics of World War II's European theater ensures that readers never lose sight of the individuals involved. Although Mr. Lusby was not mentioned specifically in the book, his outfit was mentioned several times, and he lived the life of the longshore soldiers. You know, by the way, did I tell you Mr. Lusby could sing?
He asked Doris where I was at. She said, he's in the house. He told her, and he stood in the foyer there. And after I got through singing, he said, get you a song ready for Sunday. I said, no, I don't sing. I said, I don't pray in public or sing in public either. He said, he's going to get you one ready. I'm only human. I'm just a man. Lord, help me believe in all I can be. Show me the stairway that I have to climb. Lord, for my sake, help me to take one day at a time. One day at a time, sweet Jesus, that's all. To do every day what I have to do. Yesterday's gone, sweet Jesus, and tomorrow may never be mine. Help me today, show me the way, one day at a time.
You know, I wanted to specifically play this show today because this is the day of the Robert Huff reunion that's held in East Knoxville every year. Mr. Lusby will probably be at that reunion. And you know, so was Charles Beale, who fought across the European continent by the time he was 19. And so was Henry Carson, who got the Soldier's Medal in Vietnam. And Mr. Leslie, you're just another soldier, another young man from Robert Huff Elementary School who served our nation. You've been listening to Veteran Next Door. I'm your host, Randy Baxter, and we'll see you next week.
I never was a soldier, but I played one as a child. History was good to me. I grew up free and wild.
You've been listening to Randall Baxter and the Veteran Next Door.
Stories told and retold from the battlefronts of America's wars by the veterans themselves. The Veteran Next Door. You love the show. Now get the book. World War II, Volume 1, 1939 to 1946. Read about how our veterans attempted to free children trapped by fascist countries. Learn about the supermen we sent to liberate the world from the crimes of World War II. Stories of Pacific land battles on the land and the sea, battles in Europe, land in the air, survival in the ocean, when a ship sinks and one breaks in half, soldiers who deserve the Medal of Honor, and read the story of the Battle of Athens, Tennessee, when many soldiers came home and had to deal with a corrupt county government and prove the need for our Second Amendment. Stories told and retold from the battlefront of America's wars. Be sure to get your copy at Amazon.com. The Veteran Next Door, Stories from World War II, Volume 1, 1939 through 1946. Don't miss one word of The Veteran Next Door.
You know, if you already have the book, I hope you're enjoying it. But a lot of people ask me, do they have to order through Amazon.com? Answer is no. You can get it direct from me and have it autographed. All you have to do is call 865-525-2323. Or you can go to my website at www.theveterannextdoor.com. And those are all little letters, no spaces, theveterannextdoor.com. Makes a great gift for birthdays, anniversaries. You know, I get emails from people that said they've bought and read the book and they've learned more about their parents by reading the experience of other people during World War II. I think you'd enjoy it too. So give us a call, 865-525-2323, or order the book online at theveterannextdoor.com.
If you'd like a copy of today's show, contact Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com or call 865-525-2323. Or you can pick them up at the Veteran Next Door store at 4812 Asheville Highway. Copies can be purchased as individual shows, multiple copies of the same show, or as a series. What better way to share time with the kids than by listening to the experiences of people who actually lived through historic events, like the Battle of the Bulge, World War I, Knoxville during the Civil War, Vietnam as told by soldiers who were there, the Cuban Missile Crisis, Afghanistan, and Islam in the 20th century. Each show is hosted by the Veteran Next Door host, Randy Baxter, describing the history-making events and introducing you to people who experienced the event firsthand. Purchase the shows one at a time or in sets by topic or mix and match to suit your learning need. For a list of available shows, call 865-525-2323 or contact Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com.
Are you a licensed life insurance agent anywhere in the United States? Are you a Medicare specialist, final expense agent, captive agent, or independent broker? I have a software package that you're going to want. It's by Estate Docs Pro, and it allows you to establish a revocable living trust for your clients, and you become their go-to person for estate planning and financial planning. You can get a free 30-day trial of this software with training, and all you have to do is ask. You can call me at 865-525-2323, or you can email me at randallbaxter@randallbaxter.com or www.estatepositioningservices.com. Get your 30-day trial. Get your training on how to set this up and watch your income go up. Remember, there's absolutely no cost to you as the agent to learn this software program. No commitment, no obligation. But once you see how it works, you're going to be glad you made the call. Call 865-525-2323 or get in touch with Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com.